All the second stage tanks now pressurized. 35 seconds and counting. We are still going.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lindsay.
Are we beginning to see the formation of a fundamental shift in the American dream of home ownership?
A weekly mortgage market update.
20 seconds and counting.
Providing up-to-the-minute information.
The absence of Chinese investors in the real estate market, and they're really starting to have an impact, but it's only
on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry.
T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal.
If you look at it on a dollar value, it's significant. If you look at it on a unit basis, it's inconsequential to the overall big market.
To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972.
Here's the deal. How much of the market, real estate market, is comprised of this type of property?
12, 11, 10, 9, ignition sequence start.
And now, here's your host of Lickin' on Lending,
3, 2,
David Lickin.
So good to have you with us, everybody. Hope you're having a great Monday. Last week was crazy. It was wild. Tell you all about that a little bit later. But it's Monday, January 29th. We're all back in our offices after being on Amelia Island. And in my case, back and forth across the country several times. But we're back. We're here. We're excited to have you be here with us. This podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals. And we're grateful to have you as our listener. Again, our commitment to you is to bring you timely, updated, current information, what is going on, and do so in an audio format you can listen to anytime and anywhere. Now join us as we get into another great program. I'm excited to have a good friend, John Soroka, with us. John is the principal and brand strategist for Soroka Brand Development. John's been serving the mortgage and financial industry for 30 years, long time. He doesn't even look that old. How's that? Well, his dad and I have been around forever, and I started with his dad back, 40 years ago. Great group of people, great company, and we're talking about today the value of social media, the proper engagement techniques. I'm telling you, folks, there is a tectonic shift happening. It is going. Everything I heard at the conference, consumer direct, costs are rising for the traditional model. Surprise, you loan originators out there, don't be too greedy. Could find yourself on the other side of a new tectonic shift here. And so my word to everyone out there is, I don't think the realtor model, calling on realtors, is going away, but there's definitely some things shifting, and the consumer direct is getting a lot of attention. So let's get into thanking our sponsors. I am so grateful for our sponsors. They are such an integral part of what we do, and I had the privilege this last week of speaking at Arch MI's national sales meeting. I was on Amelia Island, jumped on an airplane right after I spoke on Tuesday, flew out Wednesday, landed at 3 a.m., got up and was speaking at 11 a.m., got on an airplane, flew back. But I spoke at Arch MI's national sales meeting in Phoenix. So that was across the country, interrupting my time there at Amelia Island. But it was really good. That organization has done so well, and it's got a top. I know there's a lot of y'all that listen to this program. There was a little Texan slip that all y'all had listened to this program that are part with other MI companies. We respect you. You do a great job. But Arch MI is undisputably the leader of what they're doing. And many are trying to figure out how to compete. So good group. And it is an honor to be there. Thank you, Arch MI, for being a sponsor of our program. And also, one of our newer sponsors is Black Knight, a leading provider of integral software and data and analytical solutions that facilitate and automate many of the business processes across the homeownership lifecycle. Great group. They're located right there in Jacksonville. I tried to get in to see them while I was there, but just could not fit that in. But great group of companies that they support and the products, and I encourage you to head out to their website. Also, Finastra, which is the third largest fintech company in the world with approximately 10,000 employees and offices in 42 countries and serving 9,000 companies worldwide. And of course, the Mortgage Collaborative, the power of the network. Good to have them here with us. Also, just going live with Lenders One. Honored to have Lenders One also a part of the advertising population that we've got here, as well as Velma, the efficient electronic mortgage email marketing platform that you can use. Get your word out. You know, emails still work. It's a great way to work with it, and we're thrilled to have a partnership with Velma, stands for Virtual Electronic Marketing Assistant. And a special thank you goes to Alice, Andy. Joe's not with us today, but we do have the rest of the group. We're very excited to have Alan along with us. And let's see here, of course, our special guest. So upcoming MBA conferences, the National Mortgage Servicing Expo coming up in February 6th through the 9th at the Gaylord. Also, then we have the Texas Mortgage Roundup in San Antonio. I'll be speaking at that February 13th. And that's at the Marriott Plaza. I'll be the speaker at that 1 to 2 p.m. session, about 600 to 900 sales. Mortgage loan originators will be there. Looking forward to speaking to that group. Then also February 11th through the 14th, the CREF Multifamily Housing Convention Expo, Marriott. That is going on at the Marriott Marquis. They're in San Diego at the Marina. Great place to go this time of the year. February 21st is at the Embassy Suites in Charlotte is the CRA Residential Lending Workshop. A lot going on in that area, especially with the political environment we have. Then there's the Midwinter Conference is March 4th through the 7th. Lots of things going on throughout that we could get into and talk about. We'll let you go, encourage you to go over to the website and take a look at our calendar and where I'll be speaking. Lots of activity going on there. So let's go over to Rob Van Raphorst, who has an update on today's Mortgage Minute.
Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. I'm Rob Van Raphorst. Last week, Congress resolved the short-lived government shutdown and passed another continuing resolution that will fund the government through February 8th, although the debates surrounding immigration and spending caps remained unsolved. Also in the House, Jerome Powell was nominated to serve as the next chairman of the Federal Reserve. His nomination passed easily with a vote of 84 to 13, and he will take the reins from current chair Janet Yellen when her term expires on February 3rd. Looking now at the Mortgage Weekly Application Survey, mortgage apps increased 4.5% from 1 week earlier, and the average contract interest rate for a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage increased to its highest level since March 2017 at 4.36%. MBA's National Mortgage Servicing Conference and Expo 2018 will take place February 6th through the 9th in Dallas, Texas, and MBA's CREF Multifamily Housing Convention and Expo 2018 will take place in San Diego February 11th through February 14th. We hope to see you there. Thanks for joining me for this week's Mortgage Minute.
We definitely have a lot going on in this industry. So good to have you with us. Now let's run over to Les Parker. I was with Les and company this last week on Amelia Island. So much fun. And let's hear what he has to say for the macro look at the markets.
Thanks, Dave, for the great work you did for us last week. Loan Logic sponsors Market Logic's Live.
So keep on rocking me, baby. Keep on rocking me, baby.
Rocking our baby. Don't get suspicious. Now, don't be suspicious. Maybe you know bucks will be friends in time. Market Logics wrote about the dollar reality when Trump praised dollar weakness in early 2017. It reflected the same sentiment expressed by Mnuchin in Davos. If the U.S. economy is healthy, the dollar will be strong. Currently, the U.S. economy is, drumroll please, unhealthy with too much debt, protectionist rhetoric, accommodative monetary policy, and only modest legislative success. These views are my own. Go to loanlogics.com to subscribe to my daily newsletter.
Encourage you to subscribe to that, listeners. That is a good newsletter, and I'm something I pay attention to, and Les has been nailing it. Again, if you did not listen to Les Parker's economic forecast on January 8th, go back and listen to that podcast. A lot of really good information in that podcast. Well, normally we'd be running over to Joe Farr with a market update, but Joe is out of the office and away today, and so I get to bring it up. So today we have core PCE and personal income numbers. They were released at 8:30 this morning, but those numbers came in just slightly better than anticipated. So I'm looking at the website right now. Then also last week we had a lot going on regarding the stocks continue to their run higher again this week through the mortgage rates did not continue to run higher. That's a good news. So they decoupled right there. For the week, the Dow gained another 545 points. That's astounding. But mortgage rates were unchanged on the week. That's good news. So watch the market rally. And without having a negative impact on mortgage rates, that's always a good thing. It was a volatile week, though. On Monday, the government reopened the MBS prices. When they reopened it, the mortgage banking MBS prices held steady. And on Tuesday, MBS prices opened higher and held gains throughout the day.
Then on Wednesday, MBS prices gave back Tuesday's gain, even though the existing home sale prices were weak. Again, that was a little bit of a surprise, but inventory issues seem to be the thing that most everyone's pointing to. In December, existing home sales fell 4% from number well below expectations, and then Thursday ECB meeting produced no surprises, so no impact on the rates. New home sales on Thursday were below expectations, and November sales were revised significantly lower. So definitely some activity going on and on the home sales front. A little disconcerting, most likely attributable to rising interest rates and some of the volatility. So people that are on the fence are getting off the fence and closing up, but not a lot of people going in and as many contracts as anticipated on the newer homes, newer or existing homes. Then Thursday's MBS gains. See here, let's see. I'm looking at Joe's notes. He's saying, we have the first we look at fourth quarter GDP that was released. An overall number looked weak at 2.6% growth when 2.9% was expected. But the shortfall was due to a drawdown of inventories and other elements of a number which really weren't that significant in there. MBS prices fell, stocks rose following the data. This week, we've got another full week of potential market-moving events. There is the Federal Reserve. They have their meeting on Wednesday. Not much is expected from this meeting, but we do also have the ISM, the Institute of Supply Management Manufacturing Index. That comes out on Thursday. January jobs report comes out on Friday. Anticipated to be at 180,000 net new jobs. Hope we realize that. There's been some good job growth. No change in unemployment. That rate is expected to stay the same at 4.1%. Average hourly earnings expected to grow by 0.3%. And we'll see how about that is. Someone's telling me that they're actually seeing that go closer to 4%. So that'll be interesting. See if we see if job growth and if that starts triggering some inflationary trends possibly. In addition, we got consumer confidence tomorrow, pending home sales on Wednesday, construction spending on Thursday, and consumer sentiment on Friday. So Joe Farr got to get back here, so you do a better job of that economic stuff to do. But it's good to have you here with us, everybody. I encourage you to get signed up with Velma. Use them as an email marketing tool. We're using them, and those that do really are having some great luck. Are you using one of those expensive CRMs that your loan officers won't use? If so, then give my friends at Velma a call and let them help you create a customer journey that relies on the data and not on loan officer interaction. I encourage you to consider working with Velma to create a truly automated marketing experience for your organization. Velma makes marketing automation easy. Schedule a demo today at Velma.com, VELMA.com.
The Mortgage Collaborative was founded by former chairman of the NBA, John Robbins and David Kittle, and leaders at the forefront of the diversity movement in the real estate industry, Jim Park and Gary Acosta. The Mortgage Collaborative is the nation's only independent cooperative. The Collaborative provides its members the opportunity to meet and form meaningful relationships with top mortgage professionals and leaders in our industry. In a relationship-driven business such as ours, often who you know is as important as what you know. To learn more, go to mortgagecollaborative.com or call Rich Swarbinski at 440-552-0691. The power of the network.
That's true. Power of the network. Great place to meet a lot of people. They've got their upcoming winter conference in San Diego, so a lot of people will be there. I encourage you to check it out. Go to the website TMC or the Mortgage Collaborative. And check out the upcoming winter conference. We had David Kittle on last week, my good buddy David, such a dear friend, and it was fun to listen to his comments about M&A and where the markets are going. Let's get Alice back on. Alice, I did my best to cover your area last week, but I got to tell you, I slaughtered it. It was that good.
Oh,
we need you.
No.
We need you live. We just need you live. I'm sorry. I did the best.
I'm sure
we were huddled around. We were huddled. I was working off of David Kittle's end table in his room. We thought we'd use their dial-in phone numbers. The phone system didn't work, so we all dialed in, but it was not conducive to having good notes so I could read it. But you're here live now, so what you got for us?
All right. Well, I have a short report for today because we're still waiting for Congress to do a few things. We have
to do something,
yeah. Yeah, there are a lot of bills pending related to the mortgage industry. You know, one of the key ones that we obviously want to see some movement on is the Safe Transitional Licensing Act. but haven't seen that move forward yet. It's gotten some attention, hit and miss over the list. But the So a couple quick things then is, one is going to be, obviously, I think we mentioned in the last program, or one of the things I sent you, was that MGIC and now NMI have put out they aren't going to be taking loans with a DTI that exceeds 45 unless the credit score is over 700. So we can already see that the MI companies are having to step in to control the credit box that's going on within the automated underwriting systems that we see now. Some, you know, pretty high-risk loans are getting approved eligible from the systems, and now it's starting to force the marketplace to put some boundaries in those so that we don't repeat history, right? We're all going, didn't learn that from the last time? So, and then one other quick thing is the GSE reform is finally got a little bit of visibility. It's been in a couple of the publications, Scotsman Guide and the Independent Community Bankers Association. They all picked up on Mel Watt's letter to the Senate, to the Senate House Finance Committee about where he sees GSE reform headed. So this is a little helpful. It doesn't mean anything dramatic has moved forward. But behind the scenes, we're hoping that now this at least gives some people some direction on where at least Mel Watt is thinking this needs to go. Because the keys to the industry are that we get make sure we maintain a level playing field. We still have that cash window for some smaller players, which is important. And he did reference that. He's still referencing, you know, explicit guarantee. So I think that's what a lot of folks want to make sure that we see. But one of the concerning areas and divisive topics is how many do we need, right? So let's take the best of Fannie and Freddie and make that continue. But do we really need a third or a fourth guarantor out there in the market? And how do you make sure that it doesn't become a bank-held guarantor? So, you know, we're still, the comments weren't conclusive, but at least leaning in the right direction for some of the key points that the MBA and independent community bankers have been looking for. So as far as the legislative update, Dave, that's where I'm going to end my report.
That's it. Yeah. Get those guys back to work, Alice. Get so we get some of this stuff moved through. Too much pending, not enough getting done. Is there anything
Thank
out there
you.
That is really of greatest concern to you that's out there that could have the biggest impact on us? Well, someone just shot me. Of all that she sees going on, here's the question that someone just texted me. By the way, you guys can text me, listeners, at 512-632-2900. Someone hit that number and they texted me and said, what is the thing that is on Alice's radar the most that could have the biggest impact on my business?
Well, if you're asking from a legislative standpoint, I'm going to say it's this. Yeah, I'm going to say we have to move GSE reform. This cannot keep getting kicked down the road to where it's an 11th hour discussion and we still haven't solved the whole shareholder side of this. So we really need to get a few things confirmed. This is going to move through Congress. It's not going to be a shareholder initiative. Take the things that we like out of the MBA and the various proposals out there. There's several white papers on this. And start moving this. This has to start moving. So that, to me, is the biggest impact to the industry, because if they get it wrong, then we're not going to have a level playing field, and there's going to be a lot of mortgage brokers and smaller mortgage lenders and bankers in particular that it's not going to work for them to be in the mortgage industry if we let the big players take over, or we lose too much of what we have today that allows a level playing field. So that, to me, is the biggest thing. From a market-driven standpoint, just the change in the markets, change in rates, and you better be a purchase money shop right now or you won't be in business very long. That's the other side of what's on our mind.
Purchase or consumer direct. We're seeing a lot of focus on consumer direct. We'll be talking a little bit, which is why we're getting back to the it's really significant. Al, thank you so much. Good to have you here live with us as well. And we're going to get that private phone line brought in there. Get Bill to Annie up for your own private phone line, so we have to get that cell phone. Thanks so much for dialing in. Folks, we're going to be right back after this brief break with Finastra.
Hey, thanks a lot, David. Finastra is extremely proud to be a key sponsor of the Lickin' On Lending Program. Known formerly as D&H, Finastra's global lending division provides end-to-end solutions and innovation to the full spectrum of lenders, including independent mortgage bankers, community banks and credit unions, and even the largest banks globally. Learn more about how you provide an innovative digital experience for your borrowers by leveraging our multi-channel point-of-sale solution, which includes the new MortgageBot Mobile, by visiting our website at finastra.com.
So good. Yes, Finastra. Awesome stuff. Awesome company. Pleased with all of our sponsors. Alan, good to have you here with us. And I am really, it was great being with you this last week in your native territory. The conference was just 45 minutes from where you live, and it's really fun to be with you.
Likewise.
Spend some time with you. And quality guy with a lot of knowledge, and it's amazing who you know, especially in the tech world. So what you got for us today, friend?
First, thanks. It was good to see you as well and spend time with you. And I would say vice versa. Walking down the hallway with you is like being with the mayor. So it's more fun to spend time with you and get to meet all different kinds of people. Today, we're going to talk about an interesting topic, which we're going to lead into a full series around. We've been telling everyone that we're going to get our Tech Stack Radio program launched this month. I think we're just maybe a week away from making our big announcement and having our first podcast out there. But a series that we're going to focus on is going to be Build or Buy.
Build or Buy, and you're talking about technology. Build or Buying technology.
That's right. Some of us have pondered it, some of us have avoided it, and some have still not been able to decide. In those cases, it's not a bad decision, especially if you haven't been able to decide. For one, and for those that have a huge amount of pride, they tend to build it. They love to build it.
Yep.
And in many of those cases, they're very successful. It feels the feeling of pride, accomplishment that you get during the build and response process, and the acceptance that you get after that build. And the feeling of being new and disruptive, it drives us, right? This whole industry is being so disruptive today. In a yearly study, I was looking online to find stats. In a yearly study Gartner put out, 2017, it was a survey that just came out, CIO survey, and they have this big giant conference every year. It's revealing that some of the differentiating factors of a high-performance digital business is the participation in the digital ecosystem. So it's not a matter of do you have the money to spend and do you have the right people, but can you get the operational part of the business to participate and be a part of it? And so being ready to join a digital ecosystem and subsequently reap the performance benefits involves preparation across the entire enterprise. So are you digital ecosystem ready? Well, there are positives and negatives, David, with both sides of the coin, especially if your toolbox is filled with development processes and resources. Here's the thing. In mortgage technology, and in most cases, you're a lender or a vendor, and in a very fast-moving industry that's undergoing a digital transformation, the answer to this question may directly affect your ability to scale and your bottom line. Looking back again at that same report, on average, top performers expect to develop 40% of their new digital solutions in-house because the components don't exist externally. That's right. Or startups aren't making or aren't able to scale quick enough. Sound familiar? So
yeah.
If you compare that to our industry, many of our top mortgage lenders seem to be doing just that. They've been involved in building their own platforms, completing acquisitions of technology vendors to expand and make their own, or they've been making large capital investments and pursuing interest in technology and innovative companies. And that's the reason why you may think it's a likely common theme, but ultimately different in some cases. Let's just look at the LOS platforms, loan origination software systems. That segment of our industry, the database of record for your mortgage origination business and the core system that you're using when you manage your loan manufacturing process, it's been a pain point for some. It's not because they're bad systems. In fact, being a developer of technology myself, David, and keeping up with customers' needs, it takes money and expertise and an orchestration of all different roles to build and expand these systems. And if you add to the mix the complexity of our business alone, regulation, risk, and everything else we have, it brings up the topic of build or buy. So for those that have the need for fast change, like some of those lenders, they have a direct vision or near-term goals and growth. They already made the decisions to build their own. They want to be in the driver's seat to their success. That includes how technology brings them to market. They have the money, the staff. In fact, a number of great innovative minds and technology-enabled folks that you and I both know have gone to work for these lenders, and they've been hunkered down building their next-gen platforms. And by the way, who doesn't want less vendor risk and vendor management and the management of integrating all those different projects together when you're trying to get to market much faster, especially when you're managing it for two different vendors and you really don't have any control? So as they need to expand and bring more solutions to the platforms, they bring the necessary vendors that's under those different terms. On the other side of that coin, David, some lenders have built middleware. And their investment into the digital transformation has been to secure the workflow aspect of the transaction and to own a more significant part of the vendor and project management transformation. And then a whole nother way to look at this is the question of build versus buy is making an educated decision on what you actually need to buy. Each LOS vendor, they all have different strengths. They all have good and bad. And sometimes the good is directly aligned with your company's good. But more importantly, some of these systems are well aligned with a best practice and customizable process, which allows your investment to be around planning, success, and maintenance. There's so many more points for us to explore. But
we'll be doing that.
Almost like going to a commercial break. We're going to talk about that on Tech Stack Radio. So we're going to try and bring some real good people to the format.
It's really interesting.
Segment. One of many, but it's something, it's going to be here forever. And as we start to transform this industry, everybody's up against that same question. Do we build or do we buy?
Yeah, that's really interesting. I didn't even think there was any more a question. I could never have recommended or imagined anyone building their own technology from the ground floor up. They might partner with someone. And I had a chance of being with 10 lenders Thursday and Friday with a number of people that are looking at this. So I had a chance to lead a discussion. It's fascinating. But tell you, I mean, the reason we got the multiple on our sale of our last company was because we built it. I just can't imagine taking that on these days. But you're saying there are those that are doing it. And I know for a fact there are. And so we're going to stay tuned to this Tech Stack Radio program to learn more about this one.
Because by the way,
I'd never thought we'd ever hear a saying that we'd recommend building again. So split the complexities. Go ahead. Yeah.
Well, by the way, as you look at some of the big lenders out there that are actually making their own way, they're starting to bridge into real estate, insurance, other types of products that all fit well into our industry. So they're becoming disruptive themselves. Now, they have a lot of risk with all that staff and the type of errors and such, but the upside of it is way larger.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Thank you so much. Appreciate you, Alan, being here and sharing with us your thoughts. Looking forward to get back to you on Tech Stack, hopefully next week. All right, folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
Thanks, David. Let me tell your audience a little bit about Archemy RateStar. RateStar is the most sophisticated pricing solution for mortgage insurance quotes ever built. RateStar has an advanced revolutionary design. It's simple to use, it's easy to access, and it's fully mobile. You can access it anywhere, anytime. RateStar provides a more sophisticated and dynamic pricing solution, far superior than conventional rate sheets. It's available on loan origination systems through many pricing engines, and it rewards your origination of high-quality loans, again, with our most competitive rates. Of course, RateStar is backed by Archemy's people power, providing superior support and service whenever you might need it. For more information about RateStar, please go to archemy.com or archemycu.com for credit unions. Thanks, David.
So true. Archemy, great group of people. So much fun being with them this last week in Phoenix. All right, let's get over to the Profit Doctor. We've got him in the house. The doctor is in the house, and I'm really interested in getting an important update. Now, tax liability. That's not my favorite topic, but what you got? We got to hear it. You always bring us, the doctor always brings us some news we don't necessarily want to hear, but we need to hear. So what you got?
Exactly. Well, you know, Dave, if tax liability is something we want to avoid, and we don't want to be surprised when all of a sudden the tax man comes around and we have to write a big check. That would be bad. So here's an update. There's some word out of the new tax law that affects what we call IRLC income. So that we're going to remember.
What is that on internet? What is that? What is
IRLC?
What is that?
Yeah, I've got my definition right here because nobody knows what IRLC is. It's the locked pipeline. It's the applications in process that are locked. IRLC stands for interest rate lock commitment. So we abbreviate interest rate lock commitment, IRLC. And this is the word that CPAs use to describe the commitment that an independent mortgage bank makes to a customer. So we've got this new tax law. And so the CPA lawyers who are tax experts, now, these are the geek of the geeks, right? So the normal CPAs that can have a conversation are geeky, but the tax CPAs are the guys that live under rocks and only come out at night. So the tax experts came out and said, under the new tax law, independent mortgage banks are going to have to pay tax on the IRLC income, on the locked pipeline income. Now, this is a huge change, and it's very significant because this means potentially tax liability. So we don't want to do tax liability. So bear with me. I'm going to do just a couple of quick numbers. I'm going to keep it simple.
Right.
Let's say we got a $10 million locked pipeline at the end of the month or end of the year at any period. Now, when we lock a loan, we expect to make money when we close and sell the loan. That's how we make money. We charge some fees, but mostly we make money on our gain on sale. So when we have our locked pipeline, there's money in there that we're going to make when we close and sell the loan. The CPAs call this unrealized gain. It's the unrealized gain in the locked applications. And funny as it sounds, CPAs actually make you put the value of that in your income and you put it on your balance sheet. It's called derivative asset. So if you've got a $10 million locked pipeline, that's like 4%, 5% gain. At 4% gain, that's $400,000 in profit.
Wow.
So that $400,000 in profit that goes on your book. Now, we like that because more income is good. More income means we have more capital. We like more capital because warehouse lenders like it and Fannie likes it. So that's a good thing. But now here's the problem. That $400,000 in additional income with even the reduced tax rates, that's $100,000 in money you got to write a check to pay. So hang on a second. We don't want to pay more. We want to pay less tax. So what do?
Yep.
Well, what we got to do is we got to lower the amount of that IRLC income. And we do that because a locked application isn't ready to be sold. You can't call up a broker and say, hey, sell my IRLCs. They have to be processed. You got to process them. You got to underwrite them. You got to close them, fund them. And then you've got a loan that you can sell. There's a lot of costs that you got to include. Now, here's a discrepancy that we've been dealing with for the last several years. My CPA groups, my peeps, we've been saying...
My peeps. Your peeps.
My CPA peeps, we've been saying the IRLC costs are way, way, way too low. People have been counting like 0.5%, maybe 1% of cost in the derivative asset, and we're saying that's way too low. It needs to be more like 3.5%. The MBA says 3.5% cost is about right. So we've been saying, let's use the MBA cost number. That's what should be in here. So people have been ignoring us, but they're going to listen now because if you do what we've been saying, you're going to pay less tax. So that's a good thing. If you have your IRLC gain less, then you'll pay less tax. So that's where we're coming full circle around now. So if you listen to me and my amigos, which would include Andy Greer and Santo Chiarelli. Now, Santo's actually a tax guy, so he's one of the guys that lives under rocks. So, if you listen to him...
I can't wait to talk to him about that. Yep. Yeah.
You'll pay less. So now, okay, pause a second. This is a complicated issue. This is tax. So it's already challenging, complicated, hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands of pages of IRS tax law to read. It's also gap treatment of derivative. And that's also a very complicated issue with hundreds of pages of gap accounting standards codification to read. So it's complicated. It's really something to understand. So boil it all down, simplified. If you make a lot of money on your IRLC, you're going to pay a lot of tax. If you don't want to pay a bunch of tax, reduce the IRLC by having more costs. And if you want to learn more about this, shoot me an email. It's easy to remember if you can spell Andy. Andy@mbs-team.com. And I'll hook you up with a CPA mortgage tax guy who can help sort this out.
Yeah,
be
that's
warned,
a great idea.
It's coming.
It's coming, and it's so true. People that do not understand this are getting some surprises, and it's avoidable. You can avoid it by just getting some advice. Call Andy or email Andy and get going from there. Andy, thanks so much. Appreciate it so much. You being here, sharing this. The newest, latest term we have to remember, IRLC, interest rate lock commitment tax liability. Write that down, folks. You got it from the Profit Doctor. Thanks, Andy. Have a great rest of your week. Appreciate you.
Thank you, sir. Talk soon.
You bet. We're going to go now over to the KPI of the week with Motivity Solutions. Love these guys. If you don't have a dashboard, you need to get this one. Take a look at what John Maynell is focusing on this week. John?
Thank you, David, very much. Great to be here, as always. And this week, we have another underwriting-focused key performance indicator, and the KPI is average resubmits per file. This single measurement can not only help lenders develop consistency in underwriting and optimize departmental processes, it can also guide business users to examine contributing tasks and processing that affect this number. KPIs in practice, and you might say by definition, are constantly on display and updated in near real time, making it much easier to pinpoint however many friction points may be combining to produce a given effect, like number of resubmissions, which can also vary by product type, another aspect that the KPI can uncover, demonstrating once again that what gets measured gets results. And with that, Dave, I will turn it back to you. Thanks very much again.
Appreciate it very much. Motivity is now owned by Black Knight. So before we get into our interview with John Soroka here in just a minute, let's hear what Black Knight, a leading provider of integrated software data and analytical solutions that facilitate and automate many of our business processes in the industry, what they've got to say for us.
Did you know that the impact from Hurricane Harvey, Irma, and Maria has caused historic damage to thousands of homeowners in the impacted areas? The results reported by Black Knight's data and analytics team state that there were 4.38 million mortgage properties within the Harvey and Irma FEMA declared disaster areas. An estimate of just over 400,000 mortgage properties in Puerto Rico as a whole and the entire territory has been declared. Altogether, these properties represent approximately $755 billion in unpaid principal balances. Identifying properties damaged by these devastating storms is cumbersome and time-consuming for servicers. So in order to help, Black Knight has introduced disaster tracking capabilities within its LoanSphere MSP servicing system. The new functionality actually sweeps servicing portfolios to quickly identify properties in FEMA-declared disaster areas. If you want to learn more, call 844-474-2537 and you can ask Black Knight or email askblackknight@bkfs.com.
Recommend it. Ask BKFS at blackknight.com. A lot of good information. This is one of those companies that has so much data. There's so much information available to you, some tools that you need to be paying attention to. We're going to be having Black Knight on as our guest next week. Very excited about that. Well, without further ado, I want to get over to my good friend, John Soroka. John is here dialed in from, I think, out in the West Coast, San Francisco or L.A. area. John, are you here?
L.A. area, and yes, I am. Thank you, Dave. I am thrilled to be here.
So good to run into you last week on Amelia Island, and I thank you so much for agreeing to come on. I ran into John in the hallways, and I said, did you listen to our series of podcasts on Consumer Direct? And he says, oh, my gosh, yeah. And he says, great programming, and more importantly, you guys see some of the changes going on in Facebook. So love to come on and share with you. And I go, how about next week? And so I kind of put him on the spot. We had some guests move around on a bit, so we had an open slot. It worked out perfect. And it is something we want to focus in on. And so, John, it's just good to have you here. You and your dad have been dear friends for a long, long time, many, many, many years. We're grateful that you'd share some of your wisdom with us. Let's get in talking about some of the Facebook changes. There have been changes there. But could you, first of all, tell us what the importance of Facebook is to begin with in the whole scheme of things when it comes to marketing, special consumer direct marketing?
Sure, Dave. And yeah, thank you for asking me that. I think that's a great place to start here. So here's the deal. Facebook is hands down the most popular social network in the world. And in the U.S., there are 91 million users between the ages of 25 and 44. And there's another 32 million between 45 and 54. So it's a great target. And this is as of January of 2017, according to Statista. So Facebook is clearly a must-have in your marketing plan. So if you're looking to build brand awareness and use content to move people along the path to do business with you, this should be a top consideration. And this is true whether you're a lender targeting the consumer, or you're a purchaser of closed loans, or you have a tech offering, or provide any other type of service. You know, a lot of people don't see it as a B2B place to be, but actually, it's better than LinkedIn in some cases, but that's another conversation.
Really?
Yeah.
B2B, yeah. When you're dealing with consumers, I can totally get that. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the thing is that the buyer path, Dave, has completely changed, and it's very complex. And because of all the different channels available to people for communication, and the Facebook demo is such that it really hits your target no matter who it is in a substantial way. And that's why, you know, it's so good for B2B as well as B2C. But, you know, to further reinforce this, the top performing companies in the industry have a really robust social media presence. And this was actually borne out by a study conducted by Brandel in 2014, which showed a correlation between overall social engagement and performance of top lenders. And this correlation still exists, and it's even stronger now. And it's not just about attracting millennials, you know, because sure, they raise the bar and help set new expectations. But as people in society have evolved and technology has evolved, so have expectations that consumers of brands have of brands and, you know, how they communicate with them. So without question, to be sustainable, you have to adapt to this and you have to be good at it, meaning that you have to know how to inspire people to want to do business with you by, you know, leveraging communications that build trust and meet their needs. And Facebook is an important channel for them.
Yeah, it is important. I can't wait to get into some of that. So what are the changes that the lenders need to be aware of? So let's focus on it from a lender standpoint.
Well, first of all, these changes are being rolled out over the next several months. They didn't happen yet in total, but they've already started. So going forward, Facebook will now decisively favor user-generated content and deprioritize content that's being pushed out by brands, by lenders. It's been asserted that, or anybody. So it's been asserted that the idea behind this is to clean up the news feed with this whole fake news scandal and the accusation fake news, you know, influenced the election. And Facebook is a media company, which Mark Zuckerberg vehemently denies and wants to work against having that kind of an image.
Yeah, I can understand that. What does this mean for lenders and the industry service providers? How should they navigate this change? If we're seeing this shift away from the company data, more user-generated, right out organic out of the group, how do you respond to this, especially in light of some of the regulatory barriers? I know we're going to stay away from regulation. You're not an expert on that. Got Alice dialed in. We'll let her talk about that. But what are you seeing? How should they navigate this change?
You know, it's all about, Dave, real engagement now for brands. So folks need to encourage meaningful interactions. And by meaningful interactions, I really mean that posts that encourage lots of comments and shares. So posts that encourage these meaningful interactions and conversations, like between friends, you know, those types of interactions, that's not going to be affected. These changes will have the biggest effect on organic posts from brands, you know, and by organic, just to be clear, I mean, how many of your fans you can actually reach for free on Facebook by posting to your page, okay, versus boosting it by paying for it. So brands therefore need to be more creative by producing quality content that drives these interactions, because not every post should be a boosted post. So what you don't want to do though is try and hack this algorithm by using what's considered engagement bait. You know, I mean, every time an algorithm...
What's engagement bait? That's an interesting...
Well, engagement bait is when you try and goad people into commenting. Like, for example, you know, comment on this post if you like ice cream. Because posts like this are spammy and they don't drive any meaningful interaction. So, you know, organic reach has been declining for years on all social media sites. And now that Facebook is reprioritizing their content, lenders and industry vendors must learn how to use the ad platform to target their audiences as precisely as possible to increase the effectiveness of their ad dollars. It's a great platform with a really super high level of precision available.
Interesting. That is really interesting. Video is really huge now. So will video be treated any better? How does Facebook look at video, especially with Facebook Live?
You know what? I appreciate you bringing that up, Dave. And that's a really, really terrific point. Videos will still be favored. If you haven't done any Facebook Live videos yet, this should absolutely be a focus for you in the right circumstances, of course. You know, and Dave, I know that you're at all the conferences I attend and then some. So this is, you know, even a tactic that you might consider, because Mark Zuckerberg said live videos lead to discussions and on average get 6 times more interaction than regular videos.
Wow.
So if brands can find a creative reason to go live from a conference, they should experiment with this and do their best to work the platform and take the appropriate marketing steps to drive the audience. You know, or you can host live chat sessions or monthly Q&As with your audience, Facebook, or, you know, provide your audience. You can provide your audience with a cool sneak peek in your company. It's culture. If you have an event happening or a new location opening, but the key is to do this on something that your audience would care to watch, you know, but think it through. Make sure that there's meat there. The number of reality shows, as everybody here knows, has gone through the roof over the past decade. So there's an appetite for this type of reality.
Yes,
right?
True.
But
But not that kind of reality. It's two different types of reality, but we all know there's some scripting involved, and it should be. So on reality shows, as you know, producers prod the participants to drive interactions that keep the show interesting and make a fool out of themselves in many circumstances and even ruin some careers in other circumstances, right? But that yep. keeps the ratings high, that type of drama. Similarly, you want to have a plan. Nobody wants to just watch you live standing around trying to figure things out on the fly. So have a plan. They
right.
want content that makes them feel like their time is well spent, you know? So if you're already focused on posting engaging content, then you'll be fine with these new changes. However, if you post to create awareness versus engagement, and this is an important point, you're going to need a new strategy. The awareness strategy needs to be done through the ad platform. So you need to think of all the various types of content that you create and experiment with them and be creative to determine how you can take that content and manipulate it to actually drive engagement.
Yeah, this is so fascinating because I've really been believing this in this for a while. But these people that put their cell phones up and mount it there, and then you see it, turn it on, and they look at it, and they squint and go like, I guess it's live, and then they start this canned speech, it just flat turns me off. But if it is more organic and if it's more authentic, then I receive it. So when you're saying, so what you're saying then, John, is you have to treat your followers with a genuine interest, which is what I was just talking about. And it starts with a conversation that you have, and you got to sound, is it organic or empathetic or understanding? Talk about that. Because some of these live interviews, I go, oh, that's just the most narcissistic thing. They can be so engaging and so genuine. And some of these just come across as phony, and I can't delete them fast enough. So help our listeners through that.
Yeah, exactly. You have to have genuine, you have to understand what people are looking for, and then you have to give it to them, you know, and use the Facebook ad platform. You have to do this to regain that lost organic reach, and organic hasn't been a good strategy anyway for years. So
right.
you could be beautiful, engaging content, but to get that reach, be sure to use a platform and boost your post.
So that's what you say, use a platform, use Facebook Live is what you're talking about?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's Facebook Live is a very important part of this because, you know, you get much better engagement there. You get six times the engagement with Facebook
Live. Yeah,
you
said that. Yeah.
But brands have treated Facebook as a pay-to-play platform for a long time. So these changes won't affect the paid posts, but given the pressure now put on organic posts, you could well see an increase in price for cost per thousand rates.
Yeah.
Yeah, your CPM, as inventory is going to go down because, you know, I mean, this is set up a huge groundswell now in the industry, and people are understanding that they're going to have to really pay to play. So, you know, since brands will be forced to think more about the audience, this will create opportunities for advertisers and they become better Facebook citizens. And this change also creates an opportunity for brands to focus on industry influencers like you, Dave, that then relationship with their audiences. And
yeah.
it mimics then the content from friends and family, which is what Facebook is looking to accomplish.
Yeah, I want to get over to Alice for a minute. Alice, thanks. I saw you dropped and you got back dialed back in. And Alice, this creates some real consternation for a lot of lenders when you're thinking about what's being said, especially as they look at, I mean, what I understand John's saying is getting away from company-generated, you know, content per se and have it be organic. That almost opens like a compliance nightmare. What guidance would you give, Alice, to our listeners that as more and more people are turning to video, Facebook Live, and pumping out content?
Well, I think the key would really be, of course, you're going to guess the word I'm going to say, is training. The originators in particular, right, they can take huge advantage from some of the, you know, I've heard John say, that are just extremely valuable to make sure you're being relevant and you're not just looking at, well, this person over here must have a lot of likes and a lot of followers. I'm going to try and mimic what they do. And they may be completely off track. You know, building your own following with the methods you've talked about is fabulous. So from a company standpoint, I want to just make sure I'm providing guidance and resources by giving, you know, your own marketing department is leading them on how and the things that you can and just a short list of things you can't say. It's not a long list. You just got to be careful. But I think it's great. Let loan officers do it, but provide them a lot of guidance around it to make sure they're successful and don't, you know, step over into that line.
Yeah, and that's what you're about, Alice, is training there. And I think more and more focus is going to have to be on those of you that have the responsibility that you have there at Union Home on this topic, because I think it's happening. It's going to happen one way or another. So you might as well provide some guidance on it. John, let's get back to another topic that you sent over on some notes that we were talking before the show. And you mentioned that something called a term called hyper-personalization of video is a key trend. What is that? What does hyper-personalization mean?
Well, you know, Dave, before we talk about the personalization or hyper-personalization, I want to just touch on why video has become so important to establish a basis for this.
Yes,
I still think that I see out there that basis needs to be established. First of all, vision is our most dominant sense, and that's why there's been tremendous emphasis placed on pictures and especially infographics and marketing over the last several years because of their ability to grab viewers' attention and promote engagement. So imagine what moving images and sound do to promote engagement. The results are just massive. So there was a study by Wise Owl that 81% of businesses use video as a marketing tool, which is up from 63% at the start of 2017. And YouTube has over a billion users, almost one-third of all people on the internet. And 52% of marketing professionals worldwide name video as a type of content with the best ROI. So your videos don't have to be perfect works of art, okay? It's the
In fact, it's more authentic that they're not. It seems like that's the reality TV component to it. If it's too perfect, is it possible to be too perfect? I mean, the genuineness seems to be there with the more... I think define quirkiness. I don't know, genuine. Some of the stuff is just trashy junk, but so I don't know if we may not want to have to define that. But you know,
I'm going to do a I'm going to do a quick plug here for Dave Savage, Morgan.
Yeah,
Coach, because I love
does a great job.
Videos. Yeah, he does a great job. They're not overproduced. They're very natural, and Dave is super engaging. So I think he does a great job of it. And that's what I mean. They don't have to be these beautiful, perfect works of art. It's the content that's really important. And the whole, you know, concept of content marketing is based on trust and creating long-term relationships. Stop selling and let the people come to you by providing them with information that's important to them that they can really use. Also now, this is really important. When you have a video on your website, okay, it stands to reason that people are going to spend more time on your site by virtue of viewing the video. So this is great for ranking because it's a signal to Google that your site has great content. And there's a stat out there from Movly that says you're 53 times more likely to show up first on Google if you have a video on your site. And remember, Google owns YouTube. You know, we live in a mobile first world, and video and mobile go hand in hand like peanut butter and jelly. I don't recommend putting peanut butter and jelly on your hands, but you get what I mean, right? So 90% of consumers watch video on mobile devices, and it drives a 157% increase in organic traffic from the search engine result pages. And Cisco says that video will account for about 82% of all internet traffic by 2021. So good stuff.
Really? That is really good stuff. There's some stats in this thing that I listened to as you talk. It's just fascinating. It sounds like more and more lenders can do a lot to personalize their videos that they produce. And this sounds like this could have a really dramatic effect. So give us some more guidance here a little bit, if you wouldn't mind, on the video thing.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. You know, it used to be that if you just wanted to customize a video to specific geographies, that you'd have to go to an edit suite and spend a lot of time and money to accomplish that, all manual. But now you can customize video down to the individual level and leverage, you know, first, second, third party data sources and make each content block of the video dynamic, which means that information from these data sources can be introduced into various video frames to accomplish the personalization. Then each video is just an adjoined set of content blocks that looks completely natural. Cutaways and transitions look perfect. And you can even dynamically add maps to pinpoint people's locations so that you can insert the proper location content, etc. But, you know, Kepler by Conversant is one example of a tech platform that helps you accomplish this. And they got an award back at the DMA conference in 2016. And these videos can still be delivered via websites, social media news feeds, just like any other ad you see, only now it's video. And the data is completely anonymized. The brand itself doesn't create the individual video. You create it, the consumer. You, the consumer, create your own video by virtue of your public social profile information, your browsing habits, and other signals that you send out publicly about who you are, including like your Google account data and more, so that the ad can be instantly structured and served to you just like any other ad. So this is no different than what you see in your mailbox every day. And I mean the one at the end of your driveway too, you know, an envelope addressed to you with an offer. It's customized. So, you know, people store a lot more videos than they actually finish, just like with email. So personalization really helps a video stand out. And if you can tap into that personal information of the viewer, that is where the magic really happens. You know, the technology use, you know, adds an edit before an ad's first frame, using like a naming tool to insert any number of first names, spoken or written on a graphic. Different versions of the creative serve ads to consumers based on variables, you know, like their demographics or interests, where they are geographically, and using local scenes and more, all that type of thing.
It's really fascinating. It's just going so rapid. It's just really happened so rapidly. So how do you know, I really want, there's some more information right here, and I can't wait to get into analytics. But how does all this tie into a CRM system? Because there's such a focus on that.
Right. So basically, you know, the CRM system definitely accommodates distributing the video. So, you know, if you have an automated system for distributing your social media posts and whatnot, that is certainly something that you can incorporate into that, and you can blast these videos out on a very personalized level to your entire audience, to, you know, to everybody that you have email addresses for, and the various social media platforms allow you to upload information into them, all kinds of data into them, and down to the email address level, so that you can make sure that the video appropriately, you know, targets the audience that you want to approach. And this is especially valuable from a B2B standpoint.
Right. Well, let's talk about some of the analytics and the measurements that go with this. I mean, and the Profit Doctor is always interested in ROI and social media campaigns. So talk a little bit about that. Is there a good ROI on this? I mean, I know the cost of a Facebook ad is a fraction of the cost of other ads. It sounds like it's going up a bit, maybe going up as the success happens. Talk about that, ROI.
Well, the trap that a lot of companies fall into, Dave, is they have very little understanding of what actually produces a conversion. They also have very little understanding of how to reduce the cost that they're paying for each new client, because they don't know how much weight to assign to each touch point along the client's journey so that they can optimize their spend across channels, ranging from digital to billboards on the highway. So this has been a big challenge for marketers for years. According to Oracle, 67% of customers use more than one channel to inform their decisions, and new marketing channels are constantly being developed, which makes the buyer path more and more complex as time goes on. So too many are still measuring the success of a piece of content according to views and shares. And while that's important, it paints a very narrow picture of the role it actually plays in this context of the entire journey. So we have to start thinking in terms of untangling the data that's available across all campaigns and channels.
What should marketers be doing? If you advise a lot of marketers, you work a lot of marketers in marketing departments, what should they be doing to get better insights and to do a better job of creating a higher ROI?
Sure. Well, you know, there are data attribution tools out there like FOSFA and Conversion Logic and many others that don't come to mind right now, but that are making it easier to gain better insight into the path that clients take prior to converting. And by better understanding that path, you can better develop and target content along each stage of that path. So essentially, marketers should be focusing on a multi-touch attribution model and being able to assign values to each step along the buyer journey, and, you know, gaining a better understanding of how to develop better content and when and where to deliver it. So a quick example for you. Someone conducts a Google search. They see your ad in the Facebook news feed. Then they see you in their mailbox, and then they go to your website, and then they convert. Okay? Real simple. Attribution will tell you the actual contribution level of each of these exposures so that you can make adjustments to increase your conversion ratios. And you can put your money, make sure that your money is spent in the right places. You know, not too long ago, this level of attribution was largely unattainable. Older models focused on like last touch or first touch attribution, meaning giving all the credit to the first or last thing that people did before they converted. And it still happens, it's still common. So a good agency or internal resource will evaluate each marketing channel and how it performs and help you understand how each channel interacts with the others to help bring about the best outcome in ROI and conversions for the marketer. Otherwise, all you're doing is throwing budget in the wrong areas, allotting too much or too little value to the wrong things. And because, you know, marketers start realizing the problems with earlier attribution models, they started down a long path to get to where they are today, using big data and analysis and machine learning to provide much more insight than a human being can possibly manage on their own.
There's so much, John, in this. Alice, you're still here, and I'm glad you're still in here listening to this. There's a lot in this conversation that we've had today. And Alice, you want to add a few comments as we in a few moments here that we have remaining?
Well, it's just incredibly interesting, I think, because, you know, people do think that they've got Facebook mastered by just posting a video, right? And they found ways to make it work. And I think what's important to hear in all of this is it's constantly evolving and changing and getting to another level of understanding the consumer and then doing that through the data analytics. I was talking with my family members who are into gaming, and it's just amazing, the world. It's becoming a professional sport.
Isn't that amazing?
You can't stay on top of this stuff enough to really know what do the consumers want, how is everybody leveraging the internet to really have a complete and total relationship. So anyway, there's a lot to take away.
Lots of takeaways here. And John, for those that want to get in touch with you, because I'm sure they're wanting to go back and listen to this. We've already got several people say, this is the podcast I'm going to have to go back and listen to numerous times. So how can people get a hold of you if they just want to pick up the phone and get a hold of you directly or send you an email? What's the best way to reach you?
Sure. Shoot me an email at john@seroka.com. That's John with an H at seroka.com. Or you can call me directly at 310-822-8534. I'd be thrilled to speak with you.
Yeah, I've worked with John and his dad, Pat, for years. They're a great company, and I really am honored to have you on the program today, John. Appreciate the friendship, and especially for coming in and sharing such relevant information. We got to have you back on this. We're going to continue to focus on this topic. It's very critical as we continue on in our podcast. I mean, it'll be intermittent. We got other headlines we got to cover, but this is very, very fascinating, as it is the trend, I believe, of 2018 and beyond. So you have provided a lot of information. We're grateful for you being here. So, John, thank you so much as we wrap this up.
Thank you, David, as well.
Next week, February 5th, we got Black Knight. Looking forward to talking about the digital experience. A lot going on in that world. And a good friend of mine who used to consult with me, Brenda Clem, is there as well at Black Knight. So there's a lot of happening, and we're going to want to talk about that next week. So tune in next week and hear all what's going on with e-mortgages, e-signing, and everything else. Have a great week, everybody.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week